Listen to WGN Radio's newest podcast, Behind the Badge, Illinois, hosted by David Hochberg. Behind the Badge, Illinois views current events through the eyes of Illinois law enforcement leaders. Tune in. Visit WGNradio.com/behind the badge.
All right, here we go. Get set here. Reggie, once again, the trooper. We are still COVID-free on both sides of the glass, so congratulations to that. So let's just hunker down and keep podcasting in these strange days indeed. We ready to go? Yes, the levels are bouncing. Mic is hot. Talent is hotter. I'll give my three S's. Star, smile strong. Write it down in the books. Episode 207. Wow. Here we go. 3, 2, 1. Hey, it's Elton Jim Toronto, and this is Captain Podtastic. And welcome to another episode of Elton Jim's Captain Podtastic. Every Monday, a new episode is posted at WGNradio.com. Just go to the podcast section, and you'll see this podcast listed there, or we can be found wherever you find your favorite podcast. Whatever platform that is, don't forget to subscribe, rate this podcast, and most importantly, tell your friends, send a link, send a message, send good vibes, send them the note that says that your favorite podcast is Elton Jim's Captain Podtastic, and it should be theirs too. If you are new to the podcast or you are a longtime veteran, don't forget, go to WGNradio.com and you will see the prompt for this podcast, and you can find all previous podcasts, all previous 206, in fact, which can only mean one thing. Welcome to podcast 207, and I believe within the next 2 weeks, we will be celebrating our fourth anniversary of the Elton Jim's Captain Podtastic podcast. I have to go back to my daily planner from 2016, believe it or not. But I believe that the first podcast debuted around May 20th or so. But I have to see when that is. And I do have my daily planner, so I will go back and check. But yeah, 4 years of this. Who would have thought? Now, someone who hasn't been with us for 4 years, but certainly has been with us for more than half of the podcast tenure, is back after a sort of a quarantine hiatus. But let me welcome back Emily Arminetti. Hello, Emily.
Hey, Jim.
Good to hear you. You sound rested and healthy and safe. Are those all three things that can describe you at this point?
Yes, they are. I don't know about rested, but I don't think I was ever that well rested. Yeah. But anyway, it's really nice to talk to someone who I am neither married to nor gave birth to.
I know. Yes. Isn't that crazy? Yes. It is unbelievable. Yeah, it's been probably at least a month, almost right around the time this whole thing started back in mid-March, and just to get used to the world and the changes. And Emily has two young children, so that's probably why you're saying you haven't been rested. Is that correct?
Yeah, I mean, honestly, my workload goes way up when the rest of the people in this house never leave the house. So, you know.
Well, it certainly... yeah, go ahead.
Well, I was going to say, and I would never, ever call myself the teacher, because our teachers are doing a phenomenal job of, they've done a phenomenal job of rolling out remote learning and putting processes in place. But for sure, I would say the kids need a lot more hands-on guidance, because, teachers can't
yeah, well, that, work I'll tell you, with them one-on-one. That's one of the one things that I wanted to talk about with you. Like I said, Emily is hunkered down in Texas, and we can get a nice perspective. I mean, I've been talking about how things are here in the Midwest, obviously, and in the Chicago area, but it'll be nice to get a perspective how things are down south. in Texas, where she lives. And I also wanted to get a perspective of what it's like to be a parent. I am not a parent in this. I can only imagine. And so I wanted to get some of the little updates on you know, just how everyday life is from a different perspective, both regionally as well as on a daily routine. So one of the things that I did want to ask you as a parent, first of all, was exactly what you made a point of. That was the one thing that I have been noticing, and as I watch the news a little more intently than I have in a long time on a nightly basis now, almost every night, just to see what's going on for the last two months almost, I think parents have a completely new respect for teachers, because there's always been this sense that, teachers, well, what an easy job. You get summers off and you work till 3 o'clock and blah, blah, blah. You know, all the usual cliches. But now that parents are with their children for 24 hours a day, and not only having to discipline them and be around them, and your kids are right in that interesting age around 9 or 10, 7, aren't they 9 to 7?
Yeah, well, James actually celebrated his 10th birthday during this quarantine.
Oh, that must have been interesting. Wow.
Yeah, he was a real I'm amazed at what these kids who are celebrating birthdays during this time who just can't have the same type of celebration they're used to. I'm amazed at how resilient they are. They seem to be real troopers about it.
And ten is a big deal. He's in double digits now.
I know. So yeah, 10 and 5. I mean, it's definitely interesting, and they're both in school. Although my daughter is in preschool, so that is obviously not as intense as, say, when you're in elementary school and you have full day of classes and there's an actual. I'm not going to say our preschool teacher is great. She has a curriculum too, but having only one child in elementary school during this has been, much easier than, like, I have friends who have multiple kids who are in, different levels of school, and I don't even know how they're managing to keep track of all the home stuff.
Well, here's the thing that I've been observing from these different stories that I've been seeing on television. I don't, really have a lot of friends at this point that have younger kids like you. So I've noticed that the stuff that I've seen from parents, they're, the biggest kind of complaint, I don't even know if it's a complaint, but in some cases it is that, we just don't get a break because the kids are here and in between their studies and their schoolwork, then we have to, entertain them or keep them busy and all the other stuff. And usually in the course of a day, especially if your kids go to school, there's a 7 or 8 hour break that you can get your other chores done while they're away. Mm-hmm. And then, the schoolwork is taken care of by the teacher and they're being preoccupied and entertained or whatever you want to call it by the teacher. And now that's your job. And it sounds like, and it's almost like parents are like, wait a minute. This isn't what I signed up for.
Yeah. I mean, it's definitely a challenge. And it's worth noting that this week, so by the time this posts, say last week, is Teacher Appreciation Week. And so the irony of that falling during this, because I think it's true, we definitely have I always appreciated our teachers and what they do, but I definitely have a different perspective now that I see how much patience that really goes into working with the kids. The first week of this was technically our spring break. And, so I was like spinning plates, like it was like the circus around here trying to keep these kids busy because not only were they not in school, but they were also stuck at home. Did not want them on screens. I wanted them spending time outside meaning outside the house in the yard. Anywhere else. And getting fresh air and doing things that are creative. And, that was exhausting. And our teachers worked really hard on a week that they were supposed to have off, too, because it was their spring break, too, to put together a remote learning plan and put all the processes in place, which they did. And then, so once that kicked in, it definitely, it was easier because the kids, so it, the other thing I was trying to do during spring break, because they say, said, you know, they said then and still are, you know, emphasizing, it's so important to have a routine for anyone, even whether you have kids or not.
Yeah.
But kids, they really thrive on structure and they need that. And so once the remote learning kicked in, we had some structure in place. But of course, school can't be, virtual school cannot be, it can't be all day long because our teachers are in the same situation we're all in. I mean, they've got kids at home. They're trying to help, you know, their kids learn, or, you know, they have work that they have to, like, so the way that they were doing it is sort of like morning classes on Zoom. And then the kids would understand what their assignments were for the day. But unfortunately, our kids are still young enough that they would think as soon as their call with their teachers over, like, woo, I've got the rest of the day off. And then that's the challenge, is like motivating your kids to like, no, no, you don't actually have the rest of the afternoon off. Let's have a look at the list of things that you're supposed to complete by the end of this week. And so keeping them focused takes so much patience. And, you know, it's tough. And I really admire our teachers for doing that day in and day out.
Well, so now you're finally knowing what it's like to really be a parent.
Yeah, right. Yeah,
now, do you actually, now do you think, because I've wondered about this, do you feel, it's been 2 months now, and now I don't know how it is in Texas, you know, here in Illinois, they have made the order that school is not going back. You know, it's done.
Yeah, we're not going back. That's already official.
Yeah. So do you think that in the last 2 months, and I don't know, so now, in other words, will your teachers continue to give them their lessons until what would have been the last school day? Is that how that works?
Yes, they have already announced that the last day of school will be the same as what was originally planned. So the kids will continue remote learning until then. Different districts are doing different things, but in our district, kids will still be graded. But they've put some measures in place to make sure, to make up for the fact that the kids don't have the benefit of their regular classroom.
Right. Yeah. You know, so they learning. Will. So in other words, they will go, I mean, they will move on to the next grade.
Yes, they will move on to the next grade. In the only exceptions to that would be kids who, this is my understanding of the policy, the exception to that would be kids who were probably already in danger of not moving up to the next grade level before this all happened. Uh-huh. And I believe that what they said was that in those cases, the district would just work with families on a case-by-case basis. But yes, I mean, everyone else is expected to move on as planned.
Do you feel that your kids are really learning over these last couple of months?
That is an interesting question. I have had friends who have kids in school who are saying, I'm not sure how much learning is happening. But honestly, I have to think that James is learning something, because I'm learning. Like, you would not believe how much I know about the ecosystem in Antarctica right now. I mean, because the thing is, in order to make sure that he is doing a thorough job,
right,
I actually need to brush up on some of the stuff that he's working
yeah.
on. You know, so
yeah.
if I'm learning, I hope he's learning.
Because I'm just wondering now, I mean, I, you know, here, I mean, I would have to think that at this point, and in a responsible way, given if there is no vaccine, which certainly by September, I can't believe there would be, but maybe, you know, medical miracles do happen. But let's say that there is not a vaccine, and there are a few medical therapies that have shown some promise up to this point, but certainly nothing that has, you know, been a preventive. It's been some of the things that have come along now that have been okayed are helping to alleviate or shorten the actual you know, disease itself in terms of recovering from it. But in terms of pure prevention or stopping it, that still hasn't come along. So I mean, there's a good chance that the new school year come September may still be at home. Do you feel that way?
I mean, I would say I am definitely mentally preparing myself for that as a possible scenario.
Yeah.
I mean, and like we, you know, talk about kind of our naivete at the beginning of all of this. When I think back and I cast my mind back to like mid-March, when we were just about to break for their spring break, and we were hearing that the kids were going to be sent home on that last day before spring break with their iPads just in case they might be home for a few weeks. Okay.
Yeah, right.
We thought this would maybe be an extra week or two after the break.
Yeah.
You know, when I think back to what I was thinking then, I just feel like it's so hard to tell right now. Like I don't try to think too far into the future. And so, but I'm preparing myself for that possibility.
And how do they feel? Are they aware of that? Or do you think you'll have to explain that to them?
I think that they really haven't thought about it that much, but I definitely think with our daughter, we will have to do a lot of explaining because she will be starting kindergarten, and that feels like a big deal to kids at that age. You know, they feel like, oh, I'm going to be a big kid. I'm going to be in kindergarten. I'm going to be in the same school as my older sibling, you know?
Right, yeah.
And so if it comes to that, that will be, yeah, we'll definitely have to.
Well, think about it too. The whole part of the kindergarten experience as well is the real first time elongated separation from you.
That's right. Yeah, because
you know, but that won't be happening. So the kindergarten experience, if she starts kindergarten at home, then that whole experience and that separation anxiety potentially, or that separation, which actually in a way is positive in I'm a big girl now kind of thing, like you're saying, won't be there. So that's going to be an interesting kind of transition. In the opposite way.
Right. And then equally, I will have the non-separation anxiety.
Yeah, right.
Everybody needs to get out of the house.
Well, that's what's so funny because, you know, at the end of the day, on our side here, it's my wife and me. And that's the way it's been since we've been married. And sadly, as well as honestly, this COVID quarantine hasn't really changed my life all that much.
Although they do say that, you know, couples under quarantine get a real sense of whoa, even no matter how long you've been married. Whoa. Like,
yeah, we haven't. I'll tell you though, that shit. I mean, we haven't had the whoa moment yet at all.
Right.
You know, I've joked. I said, I'm glad that we like one another.
Right. See, that's the key. That's the thing. People are realizing, oh, wait a minute. I don't know if I actually like you now that I have to spend all this time with you.
Yeah, it's not about love or attraction. It's about liking.
Yeah, exactly.
It's the lowest of the feelings that you're glad you have because it is a 24-hour type of thing. And my wife has actually been working from home even before the official lockdowns at her company as a initial, you know, precursor. They said, well, we're going to have a couple of days, we're just going to try out how our remote working technology works, so let's just have a little with this group of people, let's have a trial phase just so we know before we implement it throughout the entire company, which has 20 or so thousand employees. So she's been working from home since March 9th.
Oh, wow.
And so that's over, you know, 2 months now at where she's been home. And really, the other side of the coin is that she's working 12 and 13-hour days. Because it's just, you know, she's in the communications department and there's a lot of things having to be communicated to all the different offices around the world and corporate wise and this. And so she's actually probably working harder and longer days with not going in, even without the commute.
Yeah.
Than she would be. But like I said, but during the day, I mean, she's upstairs, you know, in an office kind of setting, and I don't really bother her because she is busy. She's on calls. She's writing and stuff like that. And so we are, you know, there's occasionally, you know, she'll come down for something to eat, and I'll go upstairs and, you know, play Felix Unger and tidy up.
Right.
As she's eating, I'm pulling the plates from under her, you know. So.
Right, right.
But my point is that there is a separation, but at the same time, you know, because of her long days, and we're not really going anywhere. I'm only going out once a week for, you know, for groceries, and I'm doing some stuff around the house and outside. But I mean, she's not even, you know, there's been weeks at a time when she has not been outside, and she's like, let's just go out in the yard because I need to get some fresh air, because, you know, yeah, between the work and everything. But my point is that, yeah, so our situation has been different, but not a complete departure. But I mean, from your standpoint, like you said, I need to get people out of a house. I would assume that your personal daily routine is 180 from what it was, March 1st.
Oh yeah, totally. I'm I have to say, I feel like I'm in a never ending cycle, and I'm not complaining.
I don't think you need to apologize, because it is a different dynamic.
Well, I just want to preface it by saying, like, I'm very grateful for, that everyone's healthy. I'm really grateful that I have a family. You know, a lot of people are on their own. I have friends who live on their own, who are not married, don't have kids. And I think about them a lot, and I try to reach out to them, you know, just to catch up.
Right.
But because that would be really hard, too, to be very isolated. And so I'm grateful for all of that. But I will definitely say that. I've become kind of like in this never ending cycle of, dishes, laundry, which is curious because nobody is leaving the house.
Right. Yeah.
Yet somehow we seem to be wearing all the clothes, you know, cleaning and it's just sort of like, you know, I that could go on forever. Cause it's like, I'm cleaning one room while messing up three other rooms.
Right.
And then also cooking, like I'm cooking a lot because we're trying to do takeout in the sense that if it's someone's doing a take and bake option where you heat it up at home, to support local businesses. But I mean, we would regularly eat out once or twice a week. Once maybe with the kids, and then just the two of us get a babysitter and go out with other couples or something. So, you know, every night of the week, I'm kind of trying to think of new things to, make. And
oh yeah, no, it's yeah, a, this so. Is a total, I mean, it's a total upheaval. And to your point too, about, I mean, that's the thing. The irony is, about 3 or 4 months ago or 5 months ago, for whatever reason, long before this started, I've always joked that I never, the washing and dryer, the washing machine and the dryer were always the scariest things in the world to me. It looked like Mission Control. There was way too many knobs. I think we may have even talked about this.
Yeah.
And so, but I did overcome my fears, and I did learn how to use both. And so that's ironic, because now the funny thing is, I do my own wash now. If I need to your point, it's funny how the clothes do stack up, even though, you're not going anywhere. And so I'll just, do a load of mine and have it done. And so, my wife was like, do you have anything? And I'm like, oh, no, I did it. No, I did mine Tuesday.
Wow.
And she's like, well, when did you do that? And I'm like, hey, there's stuff going on down here. You have no idea, And my even joke is, if you remember how to do my wash, you can do it. I mean, I don't know if you remember how to do mine, because it's been such a long time. I say this to her, because now I do my own wash. So if you remember how to do mine, please don't ruin my, my colors.
Right.
But yeah, I mean, so that was kind of interesting that I learned how to use it after almost 30 years. And now it's actually come in handy, because now it's something that she doesn't have to worry about. And so, yeah, we've actually become a little more self-sufficient. And I'm, cleaning the house, and doing all that regular stuff, which I've always done to a great extent, but now, even more, and doing some other chores and stuff. So yeah, it's an interesting dynamic, but I can only imagine with three other people and two little kids among those, it's got to be, from your standpoint, a completely different world.
Well, it just makes me laugh when I think back to like when this first started and people were saying, well, look on the bright side, you can tackle all those like spring cleaning projects, all those projects that you've always been meaning to. And I'm like sitting here going, wait a second.
I haven't done anything.
I can, barely keep my head above water, like on the day-to-day stuff. But I did have that weird guilty feeling early on, like, oh my gosh, isn't this what people are supposed to be doing? Like, we're supposed to be getting to that big project to-do list.
Yeah.
And I am not getting anywhere. And, you know, and I'm just spinning wheels every day, kind of just trying to keep the day-to-day stuff, you know, keep everyone fed, clean.
Right. Yeah,
you know,
well,
healthy, whatever.
Yeah.
And then I let go because I started seeing things that said, like, don't judge yourself if, you know, you're not one of these people who's kind of like, you know, cleaning out closets and, you know, doing that, you know, washing your baseboards and whatever. So I guess I feel a little bit better about that.
What I find funny too is I have done a few of those kind of projects around the house, like even outside, you know, with our, you know, with our yard and I actually painted our porch.
Oh, look at you.
Yeah. And so, but it's so funny. It's like when you, to your point about people feeling guilty. I mean, I knew this wasn't something that I did out of boredom. It needed to be, it would have been painted in a non-COVID-19 world too. It would have been something I had to do. You know what I mean? Because for whatever reason this year, the weather in the winter, for whatever reason, took a toll on the paint. So I was going to paint it anyway. But it was so funny that as soon as that was like an all day thing, you know, that day that I did that. And then it was funny because while I was out, it was like I got started like early in the morning. And then I noticed that both of my neighbors on both sides, they came out and started doing things.
Oh, really?
Yeah. And I've noticed that a couple of times that I've sort of embarked on some of these outdoor projects. I cleaned the garage And once again, these are things that I was planning on doing. It was on my list, you know, of things to do in the spring, right, long before this happened. I made a list out in, you know, in January or February, like, okay, what do I need to do this year? Because I am anal on that, and I love lists, and I love to cross things out. So this has been actually a fun time for me. I've been able to cross a lot of things off my lists. But I've noticed that every time I go outside and do something, then the other neighbors start doing something too. I don't know if it's
you're inspiring them.
Yeah, I don't know if it's guilt or keeping up or whatever, but it's almost like, hey, he's out there doing that, and I don't even, you know. And you know, I'm like, you know, the neighborhood hermit. So if I come out I'm like the vampire. If I come out in the daylight, then people are like, whoa! If this guy's doing something, then what the hell are you? Why aren't you? You know.
Right. I better get moving.
But it's been, like I said, it's been a very interesting dynamic. As I said, you know, thankfully we've stayed healthy. And do you have any extended family or friends? Do you know anybody that has come down with COVID-19 at all?
Can you hear me right now?
Yeah.
Okay. Sorry. We do not know anyone personally. I'm going to knock on wood.
Yes.
You know, I'm a little superstitious. We have friends here who have friends who, you know, have come down with it. But I don't know anyone directly.
Yeah.
I have some friends. I have, you know, a friend I just talked to last night who lives in Ohio, who's a physical therapist, and she's still needing to do house calls.
Oh, wow.
And so that's you know, that's tough, but her patients need her. I mean, this is not just, you know, if in physical therapy, a lot of times we think about, oh, someone had knee surgery and they have to rehab it. But like, you know, when you have someone who's recovering from a stroke or, you know, something like that, it's like they need to continue their therapy. So, you know, my brother is, works for a company where they're considered essential. So he's out working and, I worry about him, you know, but you know, he's wearing masks and he's got hand sanitizer and gloves and stuff like that. And so, you know, we're very lucky that, you know, everyone we know is healthy right now. So,
well, that's the one thing
that continues.
The one thing that's been funny here is, you know, in this kind of a time here, you know, you do want to isolate as much as you can, and you want to just be with the people that you are with and who you know, you know, are COVID free. And within this last 2.5 months, we have had more bullshit things break.
Oh, yeah.
Where I have had to call the guy and have someone come in, and it wasn't just like, well, we can do without. You know, our dryer broke. Our light fixture in our vanity in the bathroom where we, you know, shave and shower and put on makeup and everything, the light went out. So I had to get, I mean, you know, it, there was a short. I mean, I had to get that fixed. So we've actually had like two or three work people in our house over the last 2 months.
Right.
Which is, you know, kind of, you know, it's a little weird. I mean, you know, for me to be so vigilant, I'm always kind of like, you know, I always feel like, you know, my immune system, for all I know, I've had it three times and I don't even know.
Right,
I think that I've got like,
and you know what? You may have. You could have. You don't know.
Yeah.
You wouldn't know unless you had an antibody test, really.
Yeah. But my point is, it's so funny, like the electrical thing, it didn't take long for the guy to fix or anything, but it happened literally 4 days after the lockdown was announced, right? So you're still in that.
Of course.
Yeah. So you're in that paranoid, you know, view of everything. Like, oh my God, I have to wash my hands 40 times and I can't touch this and I can't touch that. And so now I'm inviting someone from the outside world into my supposedly perfectly sterile world.
Right.
You know, and so it was just a little apprehensive. I mean, it was just, I mean, the guy came in and he had, you know, a mask on and he had gloves and he had the boots on and, you know, while he was fixing it, you know, he was pretty much alone. I was talking to him, but I was more than 6 feet away, and my wife was in another room with the door closed. Everything was fine. He wasn't here that long, but there was still that apprehension for a second or two, like, oh my gosh, I'm introducing an outside influence
right
to my sterile world. And it's just been funny how that has happened. I mean, we have, you know, we have a car. One of our cars, the lease is up, and so we're going to let the lease go, you know?
Right.
So the guy calls up and says, okay, I need to do the inspection. This was about, you know, once again, April 4th, right when things were right in the heart of it. And, okay, pull the car out of the garage, keep the keys in the thing. We don't have to have any contact. I'll check the car. I'll leave my report in the car when I'm done. I still went outside to watch this. We were more than 6 feet away, you know.
Right.
The
right.
main reason I was watching him was even though he had gloves on, right, and a mask, I had a piece of paper, and I'm watching everything he's touching as he's inspecting the car. So when he leaves, I'm going to go with my Clorox wipes and wipe all that.
Right.
So it's like, uh-oh, wait a minute. Back door hinge. You know,
right,
you know,
totally.
Trunk hinge. Okay, write that down. Steering wheel. Glove compartment. I tried to make it. I didn't want to make it obvious that I was doing that. But as soon as he left, I ran out there and started cleaning down the car.
But I feel like right now, people wouldn't be offended by that because it's just understandable. Everyone has different levels of anxiety about this. And like, so like, are you wiping down when you bring your groceries home?
Yeah.
Are you wiping those down with like Lysol wipes?
I wipe down the count. I put them, you know, because usually I'm unloading them on a counter.
Yeah.
So I would wipe down the counter, but I'm not wiping down every item. No, that
okay.
I'm not
okay.
going. Now, I know I probably should because, I mean, obviously, you know, who knows who touched, you know, this box of, you know, this box of granola bars or this, you know, bottle of Clorox or bleach. So I understand that. But at the same, so I'm not doing, it's not like a 3 hour, you know, wash down deep clean every time I leave.
Right,
but I'm
right.
certainly being a lot more conscious. I made a joke that, you know, I think I've washed my hands more in the last 2 months than I have in the last 50 years.
Oh, see, now I was an early adopter of like excessive hand washing. So
yeah,
I've been
really?
Doing that since way before.
Yeah, no,
this happened,
not at
so
all.
It's nothing new for me.
Yeah,
but.
No, this has been, but I'm happy to say that my hands are not like, you know, scaly or anything.
Right.
They've always been like a baby's bottom. I have no calluses, thanks to a life of complete of no physical labor whatsoever.
Right. Right.
But it's been funny. I mean, I've been more conscientious than I would have thought because I think, you know, now especially 2 months in, you know, my goal, and this is something I want to talk to you about as well. I mean, my goal now is, hey, I don't want to catch it now. You know, it's
right.
like I've done, supposedly we've both done here a good job of staying healthy in what would have been at least, you know, it seems as if the danger period when this stuff was spreading fast, even though it still seems to be spreading just as fast. I don't see why things are easing up. The numbers, at least in Illinois, don't reflect an easing up of things. I just think, sadly, boredom and frustration are leading to that. Mm-hmm. And you know, this virus doesn't care how bored you are, and I've been saying that for 2 months already.
Right.
But now I feel that we've done such a good job since March that now I'm being more conscientious, perhaps even now than I was before, because I'm like, I don't want to catch it now. If I've done a good job for the last 2 months, now it's almost like you don't want to slack.
Right.
You know, so I actually find myself even being more conscientious. I mean, the workman came for the dryer. Like, perfect example. When the electrician came early in April for that, I wasn't wearing a mask. He was, but I wasn't. Yeah. But right. Now when the dryer guy came this week, I wore a mask when he came in.
But see, you wearing the mask protects him. Him wearing the mask protects
you. No, I understand that, but I just my point is just the awareness of it. Just the overall conscientiousness of wash your hands and like you're saying, rub everything down. And that thing, you know, now that's almost an ingrained behavior.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You know, then whereas 2 months ago, if you would have told me, like I said, I went to New York on February 18th. Now, granted, at that time, there was no hysteria. There was never even a thought. I never thought twice about not going. I went to a concert at Madison Square Garden. There was never a hint that the concerts were going to be canceled. There was no fear. There was no worry in mid-February. That just goes to show how funny and how fast life changed.
I know.
Now, I have a question for you because I've noticed this, and maybe it's my own paranoia. When you see on the news or anywhere when you're watching television, when you see footage of something of the past, like a baseball game or a concert or anywhere where there is a huge congregation of people, like in a crowd, doesn't that look crazy? Like,
yeah.
How did we do that?
Yeah, no, I know. I mean, even if I'm like, if something comes up on my phone, like a memory or whatever, like a photo of like maybe us and our friends or the kids and their friends are gathered together. It seems so strange now.
Yeah, it seems. I mean, and that was only 2 months ago. I mean, I've had at least, let's see, 10 concerts and 3 plays and 2 vacations canceled.
Yeah.
In the last 2 months. And I don't even know when I'll be seeing a concert again in any, like a large scale concert.
Oh, we'll put it to you this way. Okay, so we canceled spring break. And then at that point, I was like, oh, we had plans to go to London at the end of April, just my husband and I, and we were going to go meet up with friends. It's like a tradition that we kind of try to do once a year. And, you know, back when we canceled spring break, I was thinking,
uh-oh, you're gone.
We schedule our London trip for until April.
Right.
Because we have so much time. But, you know, and now that makes me laugh. And then I was thinking, okay, we have Rolling Stones tickets for end of May.
Right.
And we have friends coming from Nicaragua to visit us then and go to the concert then. And we had everything all set up. Right. And then I thought, well, at least the Rolling Stones, you know, is until the end of May. Then they canceled their North American tour.
Right.
Now, I have Black Crowes tickets for early June. But it's so funny how, like, your perspective changes as this goes along, because at each point, I've been like, oh, well, at least these things we have planned aren't until so.
Oh, yeah. Oh, future, same thing. You know?
I'm now mentally prepared that we're not doing anything like that for a very long time. And I think Look, this is hard because we just don't know. But when I hear things like, you know, life is not going to go back to normal until, like, 2021 or 2022. Yeah. What I try to think to myself is, well, they don't mean we're still going to be in our house in 2022, but what they probably mean is there may not be any big stadium type events.
I can't without a vaccine. I mean, it would be completely irresponsible. And now this is not only that, but certainly it would be up to people. And I'll have to be honest with you. And now this is somebody now who sadly, and once again, I'm being sarcastic, so please hear the sarcasm in my voice. This is somebody now who is sadly locked at 197 Elton John concerts.
Oh, I know.
And who would have at this point now been attended my 202nd last Saturday in Detroit. And I really don't know if that concert tour will ever happen, given his age. And given the fact that these are all concerts at huge 20,000 seat venues, I really don't. I mean, the plans are certainly, you know, these tours have, you know, these shows that I've got tickets for have all been postponed, not canceled. And the goal is to make them up. I understand that. But I really don't know, without a vaccine that is reliable, without medical therapies that have been proven either to prevent or to at least alleviate the symptoms, I'm even wondering to myself, even if they said, okay, you know, all clear, go to a concert.
Yeah.
I don't even know whether it was Elton or Bruce Springsteen or whoever amongst my favorites. I don't even know if I would feel comfortable going.
Right. Well, and this is the thing too, like with some states reopening in a phased approach, it's like, you know, some businesses may open, but that doesn't mean people are going
to
be going.
Yeah, would you go to a restaurant right now?
No, I would not.
No, I don't care if it's half capacity or 25%. That's what I find interesting is that now, you know, we're seeing all these protests and people are screaming, I want my freedom. I mean, I'm frustrated. And you know, you just said in Texas, part of, did you say that your restaurants are open up to certain capacity?
Yeah, I think it was as of last Friday, they allowed restaurants to open at 25%.
Now, were people going in? Were people going?
There may be some people going, but I will say there were a number of businesses who technically could reopen but said they were not going to because operating at 25% capacity would actually be a loss for them.
Exactly.
So that doesn't make sense for them to open. And then this week, which by the time this post will be last week, but in a couple days, they're letting salons reopen, I think, certain businesses, salons and like hair salons, nail salons, well, you know, whatever. I mean, I'm not going to get my nails done. I'm not going to get my hair done, you know, like, so I don't know. I mean, they can reopen things, but
yeah, I
don't think it's necessarily going to mean lots of people going to, you know.
Well, my next haircut appointment is June 2nd, and even then, now here in Illinois, our shelter in place order, even though things are being loosened, the main one, you know, salons and hair things are still not open here, goes till the end of May. So June 2nd will be right at the beginning of the new phase. You know what I mean? But I'm still saying to myself, do I feel comfortable going to get a haircut?
Right.
I mean, you know, that's close quarters. I'm going to certainly wear my mask. You know, they wash my hair. They're cutting my hair. There's no 6 feet distancing here. Mm-hmm. I mean, do I have to hold my breath for an hour while I'm getting a haircut? I mean, I don't know.
I mean, for those of us, I mean, we're still... If you're stuck in your home anyway, does it really matter if your hair is like a little
I know. Well, I mean, exactly. I mean, who's seeing what? That's my point. I mean, my hair is definitely shaggy. There's no question. My wife has done some clipping and, you know, and trimming and things like that in the back and stuff like that. So there's no real need. But my point is, you know, I haven't gone for a haircut since March 1st.
I know.
And so I'm just like, I mean, it would be nice just to for that sense of, you know. But I'm still saying, I don't know. I certainly would not go. I mean, here's the other thing, too. Now, have they opened golf courses in Texas?
I think the golf courses here have been open all along.
Oh, really? Oh, okay.
Yeah, but I think they have to keep
There's a lot of restrictions. Distancing. Yeah, there's a lot of restrictions. But I felt that here in Illinois, they just opened them and the same, like you're saying, there's only twosomes allowed. You can't touch the flag sticks. There's no carts, you know, no driving carts. You have to pay before the clubhouse isn't open. So there's a lot of restrictions. Even the holes itself have the cup is filled to about an inch so that you don't reach into the cup to grab the ball because you could leave, you know, touch the side of the cup and leave the virus there. So there's a lot of restrictions, but at least people are out and hitting the ball. But I felt like, I thought when they opened that up and didn't open up, because to me, I don't think that we're ready to even loosen these. Maybe I'm being overprotective. But
no, I agree with you.
Yeah.
I think that,
so here's my thing, though. How isn't this sexist? Why, if you can open up a golf course because the men are frustrated and bored and want to get away and get out of the house, then why can't the salons be open for women who want to get their fingernails done? Or just, you know, it seems very sexist to me that the women's things that might be a little respite and a little diversion have remained closed, at least here, but the golf course is open for the guys.
Yeah, I mean, I guess I assume it's like because of the nature of golf being kind of open aired and you don't necessarily have to get close to people. I mean, you cannot get your nails done without
someone
staying 6 feet away.
Yeah, from, I just found it funny how the male stuff was okayed.
Yeah.
But the seemingly female stuff wasn't. But yeah, that's what I said. I still feel, you know, that thing is June 2nd, and I'm sure they'll take a lot of precautions. Now, I had to go. I've got an eye ailment where I can't just, I mean, I've had dentist appointments that have been canceled and other kind of, you know, and doctor's physicals. I actually had, you know, a physical over the phone. Obviously, we couldn't take any blood yet, so that's had to be pushed back. But, I mean, I did have a little consultation with my doctor because it was time for, you know, for a, you know, for a checkup. But now, for instance, I had to get this treatment on my eye. Now, this was right at the time again. Right, everything happened that last week of March that I had to do. You know,
right?
I had to call an electrician, had to go to this eye doctor. I went to the eye doctor. They said, "Okay, you know, because I have to get this treatment." They said, "When you get to the, you know, it's in a medical building, not a hospital, just a medical building with a lot of different doctors' offices." I got to the parking lot. They said, "When you get to the parking lot, call us. Let us know you're here. Stay in the car." We will call you when we're ready for you. So then I'm sitting in the car for about 10 minutes. They call me. I go up. I go into the lobby. They take my temperature before I can go up to the doctor's office. I'm clear there. I go in. No one is in the waiting room. I go in, sit down. You know, everybody has masks on. And I get my treatment and I'm out. That whole process for me to leave my house, go to this place, it's always a long wait, and then come home usually takes 2.5 hours from door to door.
Okay.
I got home in an hour.
Wow.
I came home, and my wife said, "Well, what happened? Did they cancel it?" I said, "No." I said, "This is the greatest doctor's appointment I ever had in my life."
Right. Yeah.
But I'm wondering now, in terms of if doctor's offices start to open. I mean, I don't, like I said, I rescheduled, like you're saying, like we were still living like month by month. Okay, so I'm supposed to have this doctor's appointment in April, and now I've made it for early June. Even if there's an all clear, am I going to feel comfortable going to a doctor's office even in early June?
Yeah, see, that's the thing. How can you know? Like 4 weeks ago, you thought certain things would be doable.
Thought, I looked back at some old emails that I wrote to people, like in, you know, early March or mid-March this happened, saying, "Oh, well, you know, hopefully, you know, by June this will all be gone," and, you know, blah, blah, blah. It's like the naivete was amazing, you know, when you think about it. Now, my question is, are you having the protests down in Texas?
Well, I mean, Austin is the state capital. So, yeah, we've had protests here because people are protesting right outside the Capitol building. But I imagine that there are people coming from all different parts of the state. I don't think those are necessarily all local people.
But my point is, there a really kind of vocal groundswell of people saying, "I'm tired of this"?
I mean, my, it's, so I would say two things about that. Just from a community standpoint, I feel like everyone in our community seems to be on board with, let's just stay home so that we can flatten the curve. And, you know, so the general feeling I get, and people like, you know, my husband, we've been doing grocery delivery for probably the last 4 weeks, but for the first couple of weeks, he would go. And our local grocery store, which would kind of be like, we'll say like the jewel of, you know, Austin. Yeah. They put in place he said they're doing a great job over there. They've got people outside, like at the airport in the TSA line, like giving people reminders. They've got tape set up 6 feet apart so people can see. They're only letting certain people in, a certain number of people in at a time. And everyone just seemed to be going along with it. Nobody was frustrated. Nobody was. So the general sense that I get from a community standpoint here is like people are okay with this, but we have had protests here about getting back to work and reopening businesses. And but again, I think that that is more like just that can be people coming from anywhere in Texas. So they're not necessarily local. And you know, that's, I mean, if you're trying to appeal to the government, that's where you go. You go to the state capitol, right? If you want to get the ear of your local politician. So I'm not surprised that, so we have both of those things going on at the same time here in Austin.
Yeah. What scares me is a couple of things. First of all, I understand. I remember on March 8th, I was on the radio here in Chicago, and I was talking, and so this was just, you know, just beginning. The shutdowns hadn't happened yet, but the concern was there, and certain, you know, communal events were being canceled just because of the initial fear. There wasn't even really a big breakout yet. It was more preventive than it was reactive. And I said at that time, everybody was preaching patience, and I said, patience will be important through this period. Once again, I think we all thought it was going to be very short-lived.
Yeah.
But really, my main concern was, and I said, it's not patience, it's resistance. And by that I mean resist the temptation to do things that you used to do because they're not safe yet. And yeah. That was what I felt. I know human nature enough to know, and I've seen enough to know, that I just knew that while there might be some initial buy-in, that as this went on, the temptation to go back to what we were doing too soon would rear its ugly head. And I believe that all these loosenings are just too. I don't see the numbers reflecting why we are doing this. I think this is out of boredom and frustration, and sadly, not to sound over dramatic, but in these days, why not? I think if we continue to loosen these up and these numbers do not, you know, go down substantially, we're making a very, I think, dangerous message that we are going to now get into that point of what we used to talk about during the days of the Cold War of acceptable casualties.
Well, yeah, but see, the thing is, if the numbers aren't going down despite the measures that are in place, it makes me wonder, does that mean that, because I'm in my house, so I could not possibly tell you if there are 12 people walking around downtown Austin right now right. or 12,000 people. Like, right. I don't know. Yeah. So it makes me wonder, like, you know, for those of us who haven't left our houses, like, if the numbers aren't going down, that's telling me that people are out there and they are not practicing any social distancing right. and they're getting together in large groups. But we just don't know it because we don't know because
yeah.
we're stuck in our houses, you know. But I mean, I do also understand the like people who are just bored and want to get on with their lives. Like, I feel like, no, you need to stay home. I do understand people who, because like there's this thing going around and I completely get this. And it's like a little meme. I don't know if you've seen it that says, we are not all in the same boat. We are in the same storm, but we are not all in the same boat. Yeah. And that's true too. It's like everyone's situation is different. And, you know, if you are lucky enough that you can, you still have a job and you can do your work from home, so you can still get paid and you have some space to move around, or maybe you have lucky enough to have outdoor space or whatever, it's much easier to kind of comply and understand why we have to do this. If you are someone who you have to go back to work, or you need your business to reopen to survive, you know.
Oh yeah, there's no question. Yeah,
but I can see how people are getting nervous and they can't make ends meet, because this is now going on a lot longer than.
Oh yeah, no, I get that. I just get that, but I guess my fear is when I see these protests. What scares me is that these protests have they're congregating. They're standing next to one another. They're not wearing masks. The potential to spread that, because this is such an insidious disease in that you don't even know if you have it for a while. You may be outwardly asymptomatic, and you may have it. So these people are congregating in public places, you know, where other people will go on a daily basis, going to the Capitol, going outside, wherever, in the village square, wherever it may be. They're not practicing social distancing. They don't have masks. And as we've seen the way this thing, spreads, one person can infect 20. And those 20.
Yeah, of course. You know,
and so what scares me is that the protests themselves. I'm all for protesting and the rights of that. I get that. But my fear is that these protests are going to be spreading the disease. And my gosh, like the Dr. Burke said, the woman that comes on those task force press conferences,
the lady with the scarves,
the scarf
She's
lady, if you will,
the yeah, scarf lady,
yeah. Although I've taken that up, I like that look.
Yeah, you're into it.
Yeah, I'm very.
You're like, ooh, I can't wait to see what she's wearing today.
Yeah, yeah, and I've been wearing them myself now around the house. Just, you know. but I just fear, and like she said, which is she's so right. She's like, I'm afraid that if they infect they go back home after one of those protests, and they infect a spouse or a child or a parent or a grandparent, they will never forgive themselves for that.
Right. Well, I understood, and you can tell me if you've heard this or if maybe I'm understanding this wrong, but I understood that I read somewhere that this is very personal for her, because I think it was maybe her grandmother who died of the flu, because her mother brought it home. So yes, she has a family member.
I didn't know that.
It was either her grandmother or her great grandmother, but someone in their family brought home like the flu, maybe, and it killed, like, not killed, you know, I mean, that's dramatic, but like an elder member of the family then contracted it and died. And so I think for her, she totally understands that emotional element of this, which is if you were to infect a loved one and their health was like severely compromised or they died, you will never be able to forgive yourself.
I mean, I understand the economics of this. I understand, like you said, it's a good thing that we're all in the same storm, but not in the same boat. I get that. But I also feel that I would hate to have closed down society for now 2 months and have it all go for nothing.
Sure. Yeah, and that's
and to
thing.
Take
I'm
five
sure.
steps back, because then all we're doing is we don't know how long this will last. Even if there was 100%, you know, social distancing, we still don't know how long this would have lasted. But my fear is that by opening things a little too early, we are going to elongate the presence of this than maybe it would have been if we had just hunkered down a little longer and saw real, substantial, not temporary, but consistently falling numbers, where we can say, yes, it's time to open. I just think we're getting bored, and I go back to World War II. You know, we are in a war. There was sacrifice. There were lives that were upended. There were economic, things going on with that. There were, you know, families were losing their breadwinner. People were dying. People were going, you know, there was uncertainty. World War II for the United States lasted 4 years.
Right. Yeah.
Not 6 weeks. And we're after 6 weeks, we're acting as if we're caged animals.
Right.
And so that's what just bothers me, is that I just feel like, you know, this, the loosening of this, and when you're seeing some of these states that are, that their numbers do not reflect that, that they should be, it's this, this almost this kind of, you know, just, oh, enough of this already. That, you know, this, the scary part of this is we still don't know. You know, we don't know. At least even with World War II, we knew that if we beat Hitler, this will end.
Right, yes.
We don't know.
Well, this is because it's like an invisible enemy.
It is.
You know, you can't.
And like Dr. Fauci said one time, and I wish they would I wish they would repeat this every day. The, like you said before, the virus does not move on its own. It's not a jumping bean.
Mm-hmm.
It only spreads through human contact.
Yeah, it needs something to jump to.
Yes.
And if it doesn't have that,
right.
Then
so
it can't
like you said, if these numbers are rising, it's not the virus's fault. It's our fault. We are not practicing social distancing and other precautions if it is continuing to spread. Clearly, you could say all you want, but people are not. The majority of people, well, not a majority. I mean, this is not attacking the entire population, but there's a good number of people who are not practicing these things that many of us have been now put into our daily lives.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
I mean, that's the only conclusion you can make. So, yes, we've done a great job, but at the same time, have we? You know, that's what scares me, because this doesn't have to end. This, you know what I mean? This really doesn't have to end.
No, I mean, that's the that's the frightening thing about it.
Yeah.
You think to yourself, like, is this ever going to end? You know?
Like, and I really think, and not to be a Debbie Downer, I always look at things from a more realistic view. Maybe that's just my view of life. I mean, I'm an optimist like everyone else, but I also try to blend in a little reality, because I think blind faith gets you in trouble. You know, is that if we don't, you know, this thing can go on to the point where I think we should stop using the word normalcy.
Yeah.
Because just like you said before, you know, moving forward, it's not as if we're going to be quarantined in our homes for the rest of our lives. But I have to say, I would think that whatever what we consider normal. Remember, 20 years ago, it was normal to get to the airport 5 minutes before your flight took off.
Right. Yes. Oh, my mom used to talk about how when she was like in her early 20s, you could just decide today, like, I think I'm going to go to Florida, and you book your flight for the next day.
Right. But I'm just saying, before 9/11, I mean, and we traveled quite a bit with work.
Yeah.
I mean, you could get to the airport 15 minutes before. And walk right on the plane, and people could go and wave bye to you at the gate.
Oh, God, it's so funny I look back on that, because there were times, I remember when you used to go meet, if someone was coming
right,
in,
yes.
You'd go meet them at the gate.
That's what I mean.
And you'd be there waving.
So
whatever,
my point is, now that was just 20 years ago, and that was on that was caused, that huge change, you know, in that one experience between the taking your shoes off and putting your stuff in 3-ounce things and going through a heightened security and you can't go here and all the be more vigilant and what about a bag sitting there and all that stuff. Now that those new restrictions were 180 degrees more, impactful than they used to be. And that was based on one event that happened on one day.
Mm-hmm.
And then it ended. And that's how the one aspect of getting on a plane changed, right? Because of one event. Now, here we are in this, where the world has stopped for several months. So I have to think that we have to, if you're going to be responsible, and we don't want this to stay with us, and at least until there's a vaccine that we can rely on, I mean, I think that we almost have to, even if we start to loosen up, we have to reassess everything we do. And it's going to be interesting to see how many of the new things that we have been doing now, become parts of our daily routine forever.
Right.
You know?
Well, it's interesting you should draw the 9/11, you know, parallel, because I just read an article this week that says some of the most dire projections are saying that we could start losing up to 3,000 Americans a day.
Yeah.
Over the next few months. And that is roughly, I think what they said in the article was that's roughly the same amount of people that were lost in Americans that were lost in 9/11.
Yeah.
On 9/11.
Well, we've already lost more people that we've lost in Vietnam.
Yeah.
We've 55 million or 55,000 people were killed in Vietnam. We've already surpassed that.
Right.
And that was a 10-year war. That was a 10-year war. And this is 3 months.
I know.
I mean, like I said, what's scary about it, and I don't mean to be Mr. Gloom and Doom, but we, as we stand here today, we still don't know 90% about this disease and what it can do and what it will do.
Right.
I mean, that's, and now we're even seeing things where they're even wondering, even if you have it and you recover from it, what long range damage did it do to your body?
Right. Yeah.
But
this is the thing. It's like, if we keep doing this, if we just keep sort of following the advice of the experts, then that also buys time for them to understand
exactly.
And to develop things that they can put in place
right.
that will make us be more secure in fully reopening.
Yes,
at
but
some
that's why
stage,
I just wish we would be patient, because that's what's, you know, as soon as this weather, as I said, at least here in Chicago, I don't know if the weather's been there, but we've been lucky for this, because for whatever reason, our spring. And even now, here we are in May, and we're still getting we've had a couple of 70s and 60s, but for the most part, thankfully, we've been still in the 50s here.
Mm-hmm.
And so there hasn't been that cabin fever weather,
yeah,
you know, like for weeks at a time, where as soon as it gets hot, everybody runs out and goes crazy. Thankfully, here in the Chicago area, where, you know, where the spread is pretty significant, we still have had chilly weather where that crazy cabin fever, as soon as the weather gets warm, everybody runs out, hasn't happened. So we've had a saving grace there, but still, you know, the internal boredom and frustration, I think, and I think it's a little selfish as well, is rearing its ugly head. And that's what scares me, is to your point, that's exactly correct. If we just would stay the course, it would give them, the medical community's time to catch up. And maybe, you know, work at warp speed and get this quicker than normal. But if we start to fall back, we're going to have to be more worried about taking care of people as opposed to putting our efforts into curing this.
Yeah, and I mean, I've been seeing in the media this week that, you know, if that's the case, I mean, we may see a second wave in the fall, and so we may take two steps forward.
Yeah, but you're
a
parent,
and then two steps back.
Well, you're a parent, though. Yeah. You tell me, what's worse? If you never gave your kid chocolate, or if you gave your kid chocolate for a month and then said no more chocolate?
Right. I mean, yes, that's exactly.
So that's what we're at now.
I would rather
that we don't go out than we say, oh, go out. And now all of a sudden, could you imagine a governor now that's going to have to come back and say, complete shutdown, can't leave, masks on, close your doors, we're back to ground, we're back to start again.
Yeah, people will lose their minds.
Oh, it'll be chaos. And I'll end on this note, too. I am not, you know, giving anybody a break. I'm not trying to be political, but what I find interesting in this is that they're all saying how we were kind of slow on the ball here.
Mm-hmm.
That maybe 2 months or a month, but we should have been more proactive before. I don't think Abraham Lincoln or John F. Kennedy or George Washington, whoever you want to say, I don't think anybody could have handled this, because we don't know anything about this. But what I think when I see people say, oh, you know, we should have acted earlier. Okay, here's a little hypothetical, and so you tell me if I'm crazy. So let's say the last week of January, like say January 22nd, right? Let's say that the president came on television and said, now there is a virus in China that is spreading very quickly. We don't know a lot about it. People are dying. It's spreading throughout the country. Now, we don't have any positive. We have no cases here in the United States. Nobody has it here as we know so far. It hasn't come across to our borders. However, in the name of prevention, in the name of getting ahead of this so it doesn't come here, it would be very irresponsible to congregate and have 100,000 people go to Florida for the Super Bowl. So we're going to cancel the Super Bowl on February 3rd this year because we just want to be safe. What would have happened? Right. What would have happened?
Well, it's hard to say, though, because now we live in a world where, of course, you wouldn't have a Super Bowl. Like, you know,
no, but my point is, if he would have come out and said in early January, if tens of thousands of people have died after 2 months and more than a million have it, and people are screaming they want to get out of their houses, could you imagine if he would have said we're going to cancel the Super Bowl because nobody has it here?
Well, this is the thing that I understand what you're saying, but I'm a very compliant person. I always have. My parents always say, you're our rule follower. You are always our rule follower. Right. And if the president had said that, I think that I would have been like, whoa, this is a really big deal. We better stay home. Now, of course, all these weeks later, our idea of a really big deal has changed a lot. Oh, yeah. So, but I personally would have been like, uh-oh.
I know you would have, but I think.
But a lot of people would have been like, this is insane. That said, and I know like when something happens in China that feels to us like it's so far away, but once it became clear that they had a massive issue on their hands, I think then the light bulb should have gone off.
Exactly.
Here.
I understand. I'm not saying that we handled this perfectly. I just don't know what perfect is. But I just think that once again, as Americans, you know, we love to play Monday morning quarterback. And I'm just saying is I don't know who, because clearly you tell me a government that handled this right.
Well, I don't know, because it'll be interesting in the analysis of this, because there are countries that have gotten through this pretty quickly. But then it's also hard to know, like, if we're getting truthful information from those countries.
Yeah, and not only that, but you know, everybody, I've been hearing these stories. Oh, my gosh. You know, New Zealand, you know, has handled, they don't have any cases. Yeah. Okay, New Zealand has 4 million people in it.
Right.
And it's not densely populated. Like, they're not getting flights from all over. You know, the reason why New York, Chicago, and California, we get flights from all over the world and over the country. So you can't compare Sweden or New Zealand.
Well, Sweden hasn't shut down at all.
No.
I keep reading they're about to have a huge problem on their hands.
That's my point. But you
decided
can't,
to take a different approach.
Yeah, but my point is you can't compare places with 4 million people that are not densely populated, or you cannot compare. They say, well, look at Korea.
South Korea, Taiwan, interestingly. And I think it was, they said Germany fared pretty well, considering. And I don't know I think they're still looking at what, why.
But you know why? Because those governments, especially in Korea or in Thailand, were arresting people if they went outside.
Oh, yeah.
We would not allow that. Once again, we would not allow those kind of measures. So, we are stuck in this civil rights thing that we have here in a democracy. Those other those other kind of governments will say, hey, if you're outside, we're going to arrest you.
Right. Well, and my husband was saying that in some places, people would like rat out their neighbors.
That's what I'm saying.
They were like leaving their house to the authorities.
So that's not going to. So my point is, the places that have curbed it, they're either not densely populated. They have 4 million as opposed to 360 million people, and they have governmental power against that subvert people's everyday rights that we would not put up with.
Yeah.
I mean, don't forget the fact that our government is saying, I mean, I am impressed that the government has said social distancing, and for a great degree people seem to be, at least initially they were, adhering to this. I mean, when you see pictures of Times Square, or when you see pictures of, you know, Italy, or, you know, Venice, or even downtown Chicago, I'm not sure what it's like in Austin, where the streets have been, you know, in March, especially in April, I mean, those were like out of a movie, where they were just deserted.
Yeah, it's eerie. It feels like post-apocalyptic. Yeah. Someone put together a video, this was kind of early on in it too, and it was a video of Austin, all these different places in Austin that you're used to seeing really crowded and lively and whatever, and it was just empty, totally empty. And it was a video to encourage people, you know, to stay at home,
right,
and to say, like, we will bounce back. And so there was a positive message at the end of it. But I have to say, watching all of these images of places that we know really well around here just being completely deserted and Austin looking like a ghost town,
it was
eerie.
It was eerie, but it was also, like I said, I was actually impressed and surprised how well initially people were listening and adhering to those guidelines. And then, sadly, they completely, started to... I mean, remember seeing the people in Washington going and watching the cherry blossoms? Did you see that early on?
No.
Yeah.
No,
in Washington, in Washington, D.C., like in late March, the cherry blossoms came out and everybody started walking down, right outside the White House looking at the cherry blossoms. And they're are you doing?
Yeah.
Yeah. So I'm just, I'm just right now, I'm very apprehensive because I'm afraid that in June we are going to see numbers reflecting the loosening up too early. And it's a shame because I think we did initially a very good job of taking this seriously. And then suddenly there was just this there's this false perception that this is behind us.
Yeah.
And it's not. Hopefully it will be, but right now
It's the idea, too, that, you know, they've been saying this all along, and Fauci said this like early on in the process, you know, when they were trying to explain how important it is to flatten the curve and so that hospitals would not be over capacity. And, you know, they're making the Javits Center in New York into a makeshift hospital and the McCormick Center in Chicago. And so and sure enough, I have heard people say, well, they haven't had to use that yet. And it's like, but that's the point.
Yeah,
we don't want to get to that point where they have to use it. But see, there are still going to be people in our society who have that mentality.
Well, yeah, because, you know, that's why I said.
And Fauci said, if people think that we overreacted at the end of this, that is the point. That's what we want. We want it to seem like we overreacted.
Believe me, that is what my thing is. I've always said that we, unfortunately, in this country, we are always reactive. We are not preventive. We do not understand prevention. Unless there is a tragedy, we don't react. Then, of course, when there is a tragedy, we overreact.
Yeah.
But I just use this analogy all the time. If there's a small hole in front of your house and you call your alderman and say, hey, you know, there's a small hole here, could you fill it up with, you know, it will take you 5 minutes. It'll probably cost $2 of asphalt to fill this hole. And they'll say, well, is anybody got hurt, or is it, you know, any cars disabled? Well, no, it's a small hole. But I mean, if people keep driving over it, it could get bigger. And they'll be like, well, if it's not doing anything, if there's no problem with it, we're not fixing it. Of course, 6 months later, when a kid falls in it,
right,
then we'll spend $500,000 and, you know, 4 days of 24 hours to rescue the kid, where you could have spent $3 6 months ago to fill the hole.
Right.
But unless there's a need or an urgency or a tragedy, we rarely are preventive. And that's why I was initially impressed. And now, sadly, the human nature that I expected to rear its head is rearing its head, because none of this makes, when you look at the numbers, none of it makes sense to be opening up society. So I'm going to stay hunkered down. I'm glad you are feeling good, and I'm glad your family is, and I'm hopefully you're not drinking.
There have been a few quarantinis, we'll say.
Have you had Zoom cocktail parties?
The past 6 weeks.
Have you had cocktail parties?
We have. This is the thing about this. It's like, if the coronavirus doesn't get me, I'm afraid that like my liver is going to like, it's either like I survived coronavirus, right.
But now I'm an alcoholic. Disease. Now I have to go to AA. Yeah. Now
I have cirrhosis. So,
Now I have to go out because I have to go to AA meetings.
All right. That reminds me, we need to do another liquor order. They deliver around here.
Well, Emily, I'm glad that you are feeling good, you and your husband and your kids.
Thank you.
And your family.
We're happy.
And so now that you've got your schedule maybe sorted down, we can do this a little more often because I've missed talking to you and laughing, and so I appreciate you taking the time. I didn't want to bother you. I didn't want to bother you too much initially because I just didn't know if you either had run away from home. or we're in no position.
Just hiding under my blanket.
Yeah, really, you know, or just couldn't take it anymore with having everybody home and just ran away. So it's glad to hear everything's fine. So we should touch base on a more regular basis because it is always fun to talk. But I'm glad you are. I'm glad everything's fine. So just keep your mask on. Stop drinking. And by all means, the one thing I always say: wash your hands.
I always do.
Okay, we'll see you later.
All right, thanks, Jim.
And so ends the episode of Elton Jim's Captain Podtastic. Don't forget, every Monday a new episode is posted at WGNRadio.com or is found wherever you find your favorite podcast. Don't forget, subscribe, rate, and tell your friends that your favorite podcast is Elton Jim's Captain Podtastic. I hope you've enjoyed episode number 207, and hope to be back for 208 and many, many more after that. I'm Jim Tarano. I ain't here on business. I'm only here for fun. You've been listening to Elton Jim's Captain Podtastic from the end of the web to your screen. Wash your hands.